everybody doing? Good afternoon. I'm finishing my Pokemon Go. I'm chasing Pikachu and Charizard here, so give me a moment, all right, while I get them. So my name's Sean Conley. I focus on corporate strategy at Hortonworks. I will talk a little bit about what we view as the future of data processing, data motion, data at rest, things like that. I'll also cover a bit of a connected data architecture, if you will, and some of the use cases and patterns that we're seeing. But I also describe myself as an open source addict. I've been in enterprise open source for about 12 years. And I wanted to kick off by basically covering my journey with working with Microsoft actually in the open source. And that actually started about 11 years ago. So the fundamental premise that I learned when I started open source about 12 years ago is this notion of innovation happens best not in isolation, but in collaboration. And so you can get a lot of the community contributions, you know, that inverted pyramid of cooperation and contribution that Martin covered in his session earlier. That really fuels a lot of innovation. When you develop in the open, the technology can move in ways more quickly and faster in innovative ways than any single one company or one person can drive. And so that's sort of been at the root of what I learned in my early days when I started at JBoss back in 2004. So back in those days, we were in the heat of the Java versus .NET wave. JBoss focused on Java application server, enterprise Java, things like that. In 2005, about a year and a half after I had joined JBoss, I reached out to Bill Hilf at the time. So Bill Hilf and Sam Ramji, Sam I think is in charge of the Cloud Foundry Foundation now, but they were the lone open source wolves, if you will, at Microsoft back then, doing a lot in and around Linux, PowerShell, things like that. And so at that time, and particularly in the JBoss space, we saw a large segment of our customers running our platform on the Windows platform, basically interfacing with data in SQL Server, using Active Directory to protect those applications. And so what we did was we set aside the Java versus .NET religion. We set aside the proprietary versus open source religion, and we actually focused on enabling that platform from an interoperability perspective to work with those technologies. And so that sort of set the tone for later when I joined JBoss in 2011, Hortonworks in 2011. So how many in the audience have heard of Hadoop, Apache Hadoop? Okay, excellent. So Apache Hadoop started as an open source project right around 2005, early 2006 is when Yahoo contributed it to the Apache Software Foundation. So it's over 10 years old. We just celebrated its 10th birthday recently this year. In 2011, Hortonworks was founded, where about 25 of the architects and engineers who had been working on Apache Hadoop at Yahoo spun out to form a company to focus on bringing the technology to mainstream enterprise. And we preserved that relationship with Yahoo so we can do a lot of testing at scale. Their installation is in the order of about 500 petabytes of data across thousands and thousands, about 40,000 servers in their installation. They started on search and advertising, basically ingest multiple copies of World Wide Web so they can optimize search and optimize advertising, and then the rest of their business, I think, grows where there's hundreds and hundreds of millions of click streams per day that flow through the platform. But that open source journey with Microsoft around bringing that technology to the cloud started October 2011. And so back then, the Hadoop technology primarily worked on Linux and Linux-type systems and commodity hardware. And so in order to bring it to Azure, and particularly the first wave of Azure, we basically had to make sure that the Hadoop technology, as well as the rest of the ecosystem of projects, which I'll touch on in a little bit, I lovingly refer to them as the rest of the animals in the zoo. There's even a zookeeper that's a part of the platform, if you will. There's pig and other things, so very creative names in the Apache ecosystem. But enable those initially on Windows, right, as part of the Azure strategy. So on-prem Windows, and then in the Azure cloud initially on Windows. And so that journey to cloud, has been a very successful one. I think we delivered multiple revs of that Azure HD Insight service, which is Hadoop as a service in the cloud, jointly engineered with Microsoft on the Windows platform. But then Microsoft got the Linux religion as well. So we enabled that on Linux. So the whole ecosystem of Linux tools can actually be used on the Azure HD Insight service, since there's just a lot of innovation, it happens that way. So, under the hood, a lot of sweat equity, if you will, from engineers at Hortonworks, but a lot of effort and contributions and earning the stripes as committers by Microsoft engineers. And I'll shed a little light on some of that in a little bit. But the meta point there is, open source is not new. I mean, the rise of Linux, I think Red Hat went public in 1999, right? So the Linux industry's been going for a while, and I think they were basically the first wave of open source, to the point where in 2016, in many respects, open source development is just the norm, right? Future of Open Source survey, this is, I think, the 10th year that they've run this survey, and in many respects, most enterprises, and I think their sample size is around 1,500 different companies, 67% actively encourage developers to engage in and contribute to open source projects. So if you listen to the last session, there's different ways that you can participate beyond using. You can get involved in docs, you can get involved in helping others use the technology, you can contribute code, ultimately to the point where you earn your stripes as an expert, right? So that whole funnel totally applies in many open source projects. Almost 60% engage in open source to gain a competitive edge as a business. And one in three have a full-time resource dedicated. So in the US, we have the likes of like Capital One, for instance, who hires a lot of open source experts for their own. They're basically a large US bank, but in many cases, they view themselves also as a software development shop, and increasingly, they need to participate. And so there's a range of reasons why participation happens, but the sort of very real and tangible one that I point to is the recruit top talent. How I phrase it is, we are very much living in what I call the GitHub generation right now. I have a son who's a senior at University of Texas in Austin. He's been programming probably for the better part of the last 9 or 10 years. And his GitHub account is his portfolio, right? So back when I was younger, art students would have the portfolio of their works that they can show people. The GitHub URL for developers is their portfolio. Increasingly, when they graduate from university, they expect to be able to contribute. And so that's a very real issue for companies, whether they're in the software sector or not, if they're using software. In order to be competitive and get the best of the best out of university, they have to have a clear open source contribution policy. So those engineers can not only use it internally, but in their off time, not be prohibited from contributing, right? So that's very fundamentally different than 10, 15 years ago when open source was really on its rise, right? So open source is the norm. In the case of the data space, where I and the Hortonworks team focus the majority of our energy, I would argue that the Apache Software Foundation has established itself as a center of gravity for attracting a large number of data-focused open source technologies and projects. I'm just giving some examples of those up here where Yahoo contributed Hadoop, right? You have Twitter, who created Storm and contributed it to Apache. Berkeley started the Spark project and related projects. Facebook basically created Hive to run on top of Hadoop as a SQL engine. The National Security Agency built up a technology over the course of 8 years that they referred to as Niagara Files. That was their primary sort of data acquisition tool. They contributed to Apache about a year and a half ago as Apache NiFi. So robust technology contributed to open source. The NF Labs icon here, that logo is for the Apache Zeppelin project. So it's essentially, I think, about five engineers in South Korea who created a notebook for Spark. So it's a data science notebook. It also runs on Hive and other things, so you could do visualization, analytic development, machine learning, those types of things. That code fell from the sky, as I like to say, into open source. Ourselves, Microsoft, and others invested in making it secure, enabling collaboration, and bringing it to the broader enterprises in our collective platforms. So no matter who brings it in, it isn't the domain of one company. The nice thing about the Apache process is you check your badge at the door. You don't represent your company. You basically represent your interests in these projects. And you get contributions from a wide range of engineers. Specifically, a couple of examples are clearly Microsoft around Hadoop did a lot of engineering work in order to enable it for Windows and Azure and make it more scalable, make sure Hadoop can talk to Azure Data Lake Store, the WASB Object Store, things like that in a secure way. But also the Hive project has undergone a lot of transition and evolution to make it faster. Advanced SQL techniques, column store techniques that were previously applied to SQL Server, those techniques were applied to the Hive project to make it faster, more efficient, store data in a compressed manner, et cetera. And that, that was in large part due to Microsoft's participation in the projects, as an example. So the age of data, in many respects, is being driven by open source. Open source is the norm. I think it's fueling what I call the shift to a connected data architecture. So we have our classic systems of the past, if you will, but sort of the new world is fundamentally powered by what I call a connected data architecture, and I'm going to walk you through specifically what I mean and give you some granular examples of what I mean. But when you think of the new generation of applications, whether it's in predictive retail, factory automation, connected cars, the inherently hyper-connected world that we live in, you need to be able to harness data as it's in motion, as soon as it's born, and you have to be able to analyze that data before it's actually stored anywhere, right? So you have to be able to influence and interact with that data at the point of inception, and then you need to be able to get it into platforms where you can do deep historical analytics, machine learning, deep learning, and those types of things. So you kind of need both of these. And inherently, that isn't something that just runs within the data center. It has to span both cloud and data center to truly be what I refer to as a connected data architecture. So these transformational applications, whether it's data in motion in the blue, sort of iconically, data at rest in the green, you need to have sort of a data plane, if you will, that enables you to deal with the data more in the abstract, right, where you're not just doing point-to-point integrations that fall over, that you actually have an architecture that spans it gracefully and spans the boundaries of data center and cloud. So let me give you some examples on how to think about this. So the first is how connected data drives the connected car ecosystem, right? So if you look at what's happening with the connected car, it's not just about the automakers, right? There's a whole value chain of applications that can plug into this ecosystem. So from insurance companies that are doing usage-based insurance, government agencies that are optimizing traffic flows because of connected infrastructure, infotainment providers who are part of the cars, right, and giving you a better experience as the driver, to software companies that are innovating on this platform, if you will, right? And so when I translate that into what I refer to as a connected data architecture, or some of my colleagues lovingly refer to this slide as the Jimmy Neutron slide, because it's moving things all around. In the upper left, we have the cars and the sensors and the infotainment information and the control systems and the operational stuff. That's data in motion, it's born, and you need to apply some edge intelligence in many cases on that data. You might blend that data with infrastructure, connected infrastructure notions. So connected city infrastructure and devices that are in the cities. And again, that's data that's born in motion, and you might join that information. And you may bring it into the cloud so you can actually do time series-based like analytics, like route optimization of the cars and things like that. The data's born in the cloud. You're able to act on it, point of inception. You're able to store it so you can do more learning and machine learning and stuff from a time series analytic. But also, if you look in the bottom right of that diagram, you have the manufacturing line data that created the cars, right? And increasingly, they're built out on sensors, and you may capture that information, bring that into your on-premises data lake, for instance. And so you may want to take the exceptions that are thrown off from the cars, blend that with the manufacturing line data, so you get a 360-degree view of the operations of the car, but you're more proactive as it relates to maintenance issues and things like that. And so when we see connected data architectures deployed, these are the types of use cases that are very real that we're seeing being enabled today with today's technologies. And there's a whole, the whole connected car ecosystem from end to end is being impacted. Progressive Insurance in the US does usage-based insurance based off of a lot of this data and optimizes the insurance premiums for those drivers. So this isn't science fiction, it's being deployed today. In the energy sector, we have a lot of different things. One of the examples that we actually had a Hadoop summit here in Dublin, and our customer, British Gas Centrica, was talking about their journey as it relates to big data. And they basically said, we're a 200-plus-year-old utility company, right? So not a lot of people think of them as on the edge of innovation. But the smart meters in the homes that they've been rolling out actually have helped them change the nature of the relationship that they have with their customer while they optimize energy delivery, as an example. So they're using these technologies today to shape and change the brand and change their relationship with their customer. That's just on the smart grid and smart meters. There's a lot of sensors. There's weather information that could come into play in the energy sector. So when we translate that into the Jimmy Neutron slide for the energy sector, we have a very similar architecture, where you have the sensors and SCADA systems and the control systems. Schlumberger, one of the oil companies, they basically have collectors on the oil rigs, right, that are deployed. And that's basically the upper left. And they're collecting that information from an operational perspective in order to make sure that they can optimize their systems and things like that. Telemetry connected devices, again, that time series use case is pretty popular there. Exception-based handling down below in the 360-degree view of the operations, equipment failures, those types of things. So similar patterns, which is kind of cool because you can create products and experiences and assemble technologies in a way that solve these patterns. But that's connected car, that's the energy sector, and I could rattle off a bunch of these across healthcare, right, financial services, the telco and, cable delivery companies, the entertainment industry, et cetera. Many of them are moving towards this effectively, quote, hybrid architecture. I call it a connected data architecture because it's really about getting the data to the analytics and the machine learning and the, insights, if you will, that need it as soon as it needs it. So with that as backdrop, at Hortonworks, our connected data architecture manifests itself in a set of open and connected data platforms. So the Hortonworks data platform is that Hadoop-based platform. It has things like Spark and Hive and HBase and a lot of, it's about 2 to 3 dozen animals just in that HDP zoo, right? Primarily Hadoop and Spark-centric use cases. On the Hortonworks data flow side, sort of its kernel, if you will, are three pieces of open source technology. One is that Apache NiFi technology that was built at the NSA. It sort of handles the data logistics and getting data from the edge to where it needs to be in a secure way, secure multi-site communications, et cetera, in a drag and drop interface that makes it highly productive, along with things like Kafka, Storm, and others, so you can do real-time stream processing, windowing, analytics, things like that. So it's really a data in motion platform, entirely unrelated to Hadoop. So it'll work. We have customers who deploy HDF with Azure HD Insight in the cloud, and they don't even have an on-premises system. We have customers who are deploying just the HDF to store data in an SAP HANA system, as an example. So it basically has 200 different processors, if you will. So it basically speaks multi-message bus, so Kafka, ActiveMQ, Rabbit, et cetera, and it speaks multi-data system. And basically, I describe it kind of simply as it's the FedEx for data delivery. It'll get the data to where you need it to be with the right priority, and it traces it every step of the way. So you have the provenance and lineage and traceability. Pretty powerful piece of technology. So sort of the both halves are required to sort of enable this connected data architecture. So with that as context, if I project it into the Azure world, and in many cases, our customers that we serve are hybrid customers where on-premises, they might have a cybersecurity data lake, they might have an enterprise data lake. That's where they're doing that 360-degree view type of analytics. They might be doing active archival type things where they're basically getting data that was previously on tape online, so you can actually query it and do 10 years of historical analysis that you haven't been able to do before. We see that a lot in the HDP on-prem space. That same piece of technology, the Hortonworks data platform, powers Azure HD Insight. So the same set of services that are in our Hortonworks data platform 2.5 release, which just came out a few weeks ago, are also deployed in Azure HD Insight. So you have the latest Spark, you have you actually have a very rich experience as it relates to if you're a Python developer and you want to do Spark analytics, the Jupyter Notebook is all pre-assembled for you to use. If you're an R developer, the R server is integrated in and is implemented in the stack, so you can do your R analysis as part of this overall solution. And then that for those who are Scala developers or more Spark or Hive developers, that Zeppelin Notebook is also integrated and available. So it's able to speak to multiple types of developers simultaneously. Visual Studio, you're able to do Hive queries, Storm topology for real-time application development, and there's also IntelliJ, which is integrated with the platform. So it speaks to a wide range of developers, and you could just boot up these types of clusters to do your data processing job and pay on an hourly basis, right? So it's basically on-demand big data computing. So I encourage you to, if you've been unaware of HD Insight, I encourage you to check it out. It's in many cases, it's sort of the fastest path to get up and running on a lot of these Apache projects that are Hadoop, Spark, et cetera, and we continue to sort of enrich and expand that portfolio. One final thing is, I think earlier this year, Forrester took a look at the Hadoop Big Data as a Service market, and actually HD Insight fared pretty well in the upper right. So from if you're selling it internally to your management chain or others who want sort of third-party analyst feedback, it scores really well on sort of the robustness of how it integrates with the enterprise tools, the Azure HD Insight stores data into Azure Data Lake Store and WASB, so you can use Azure Machine Learning to do machine learning around it. So it's actually a very open system, and it's gotten pretty good marks on how it integrates with the set of Azure Big Data services. And I think I covered some of the developer stuff. So, as I'm ramping down on here, I think I covered a range of things. One is Microsoft's participation in open source. My point is, and I think they're making the case, particularly with .NET and other things, and for many in the audience, that may be a new thing. From my perspective, it's been a decade plus of doing open source innovation with Microsoft. But I think they're finally getting their story out. I think Satya's involvement really has flipped how people think about Microsoft, to the point where, like I pointed out, Linux being a first class citizen in Azure, I think that was a seminal moment to sort of relate to everybody that they are serious about enabling a wide range of workloads, many of which are open source. With that, I think the connected car example is, and the energy sector are just examples of the fact that every business is a data business. In the U.S., like I have a farmer here as an example. In the U.S., there's a tractor and combine manufacturer, John Deere. They're a global company. How many people think they are a tractor and combine company, right? Typically, most hands will go up. They are not. They're an analytics company, right? Those systems are merely collection vehicles. They have about 36 sensors on them. And they basically are in the business of helping farmers optimize crop yield, optimize turning radiuses of the combine so they could use the least amount of fuel to get the most amount of productivity. They are fundamentally an analytics company. They have weather data and other data that funnels in and enriches their analytics. And so it's a weird concept where you go into these normal traditional businesses, and I think Satya sort of teed it off at the beginning, is every industry is being transformed, and data is at the heart of that, and the insights that you can derive from the data are really what the value is from the enterprise perspective. So as a business, we're focused on working with Microsoft and others in this ecosystem to help people figure out how to master the value of the data. And frankly, the best approach, from my experience over the last 12 years being in open source, is you do that by embracing an open approach. You do that, that applies to data analysis as well. I think one of the hardest things for people to get over is the protectiveness of their honeypots of data, right? And so transforming how a company thinks to be able to share it in a pragmatic way, in a well-governed way, but actually share data so you can derive insights by joining data sets that were not previously joinable to unlock new insights, that is what's fueling the successful companies that are embracing an open approach and driving their next-gen data architectures. So with that, I'm going to close out on, for those of you who are sort of in the local area and inclined to learn a lot more about the future of data, we actually have an all-day roadshow event in London. In the morning is keynotes and customers giving their examples, but in the afternoon it's a split track, a technical track and a business track. The business track covers the use cases, the total cost of ownership, the return on investment type things, as well as the art of the possible, and the technical track goes deep on the technologies demo and that kind of stuff. So if you're inclined to head to London to that event, I encourage you to do that. Schedule use case workshop with the Hortonworks team. We help customers use Azure HD Insight as well as our on-prem stuff. So if you want help on how you can get more value from your data, just touch base with us. We're here to help. Check out HD Insight. It's as easy as just booting up a cluster and playing around and checking out some of the tutorials to get going. And for those of you who aren't necessarily in the cloud yet or are not allowed, we actually have a virtual machine sandbox that has a bunch of tutorials all built in. so you can download it to your laptop on any sort of virtual player. So with that, I thank you for your time, and enjoy the rest of the day, all right?